What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Wine podcast, where we talk about blockchain technology, DeFi, NFTs, and all kinds of other Web3 vibes. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and nothing said on the podcast should be taken as financial or legal advice. Let's dive into it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Wine podcast. I'm your host, Z, founder of VentureDAO, part of LimeChain, a blockchain development company. And today I have with me Kyle Barron, who is a managing partner at BCW. And BCW is a global strategic consulting and technology firm that is focusing on Web3, blockchain, and digital asset infrastructure. And would love to talk all about that today with Kyle. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We've been building together with you guys for quite some time, so it was only right. Let's start with the intro and basically your background, how you got into blockchain, and what you guys have built so far as BCW.
Great. Yeah, sure. So my personal journey, I grew up in Los Angeles. After studying political science at UCLA, I moved to Rome, Italy. I did a master's in international relations. From there, I moved to Seoul, South Korea, where I did many things during my time there. I taught at a university. I did a second master's at Korea University. And then I worked at Samsung Corporation for some years. In 2013, while working at Samsung, I started listening to some different podcasts that would talk about things specifically around Bitcoin, which is what really started to pique my interest. So in 2013, I decided to take a punt and acquire some Bitcoin. Subsequently, in 2014, I moved to Shanghai to do my MBA at CEIBS, China Europe International Business School. During that period, I tried to incorporate Bitcoin and blockchain use cases into pretty much every course that I could. Most of my classmates back in 2014-15 thought that I was sort of like, you know, that guy. But when I graduated in 2016, I moved to Hong Kong to work for Infosys, which is a large global systems integrator, or SI. And I led a telco account with them. While at Infosys, I picked back up my interest in crypto, began attending Bitcoin and Ethereum events in Hong Kong. During that time, I met a lot of different like enthusiasts, some entrepreneurs, and that's really what got me excited. Like, okay, I think I want to do something a little bit more substantive in the industry. So in 2017, during the ICO craze, we established BCW Group, which is a fintech-focused strategy consulting and technology firm. So at that time, you know, we were consulting and helping early stage projects in the crypto space. This is actually how I met LimeChain originally, in the LimeChain team, as you guys were also very early in your journey. We started doing some collaboration with Dr. Sandner at the blockchain unit from the Frankfurt School of Finance and Management. And ultimately, I met Nick, your CEO. And I think at the time, you guys were probably a 4 or 5 person shop. We were maybe smaller than that at the time. So fast forward to today. You know, our firm, we're about 40 plus employees, and we're hiring another 25. So if anybody's interested on either the business or technical side, reach out to me. Happy to talk. We have offices in Hong Kong. That's our main office. We have an office in Singapore, and we also have an office in Korea. You know, we have a wide range of clients. So we work with everything from Fortune 500s on down to startups. But everything that we do touches digital assets and DLT. So within our group, we have a few different pillars of business. We have our payments division. We have our consulting, enterprise consulting business. We have our technologies business. If you want, I can run through those with you. If not, I can stop there.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to unpack those one by one, and I probably can have like a question each. So you mentioned that you do quite a bit of consulting for Fortune 500 companies. What kinds of challenges do you solve together with those companies? I'm super interested in that.
Yeah, so it depends where we come in, right? So in some cases, we have clients that are really looking for us to help bring their traditional services into the crypto industry. That's one side of it. We have other clients that are coming in and saying, hey, we actually know what we're interested to build, or at least how to augment our existing services to build something either on DLT or utilizing digital assets. Or we have three that are just quite curious and want to know, like, what are their competitors doing? You know, what does their outlook need to be like for the next couple of years? And then maybe they're interested in building out a proof of concept. So yeah, I think that that's kind of the three main areas that we see the larger enterprises coming in at. I would say over the last year, it's now definitely matured quite a bit. A lot of the corporates are a lot more savvy when it comes to this technology and ultimately what they want to do, whether that's COVID related or just the evolution of the technology and the use cases out there. But we're starting to see companies actually come to us with solidified plans, use cases that they'd like to build out, and then they're looking for us to help design it and ultimately build it alongside them.
Nice. Love it. As you're working, I mean, I know that, and we're going to dive deeper into that, but on the product side, you guys are building a whole lot of digital asset infrastructure. You're obviously building that to solve critical challenges for basically mainstream adoption of digital assets. What are the biggest challenges that you guys see so far in the context of adoption of digital assets, and more so in the context of institutions and Fortune 500 companies? Because you've been in the blockchain space long enough, and you know that there has been this talk of institutions are coming for quite some time, but there always seem to be like different challenges around that. And what do you think are the current challenges for that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And really, it's about scalable infrastructure. You know, we see it as basically the industry is still extremely young, nascent, and still very niche. It's actually what caused us to really push into the payment space. So, you know, taking a Fortune 500 client of ours, such as Worldpay from FIS, who's the largest global acquirer in the world, basically they came to us a few years ago, and they were exactly on that path of looking at how do they bring their traditional services into this space. Now, for our perspective, that's great because we're talking about fiat on-ramps here, so the ability to purchase crypto assets or digital assets with your debit card or your credit card. You know, for us, that ultimately, that first step is how do we get more capital flow into this industry? And ultimately, having traditional ways to do that is sort of a key imperative in step one. Now, if you were to go back to, you know, 2017, 2018 period, the ability or even the ubiquity of exchanges and other platforms that accepted debit card and credit card for fast purchasing was quite limited. So this was the first area that we really focused on. With the Worldpay team, you know, really building in those payment rails. Interesting for us, though, is, you know, that's sort of step one. Obviously, through the full life cycle of payments, specifically with digital assets, there's also the offboarding of that. So being able to then turn those crypto assets back into fiat. But I think for all of us who are enthusiasts in this industry, that's not really what we're here to do. We're actually here to help those capital flows move into crypto. And then from there, figure out really cool ways of utility for those crypto assets to be able to use, whether that be in a metaverse, different types of decentralized applications, or even some of the really interesting financial instruments like DeFi. So that's sort of the first area that we really like cut our teeth on in the industry. Fast forward to today, our work with Worldpay, you know, we've made quite an amazing amount of inroads, and you're probably looking at 30 to 40% of the global fiat to crypto is running through those rails with the largest exchanges in the world, making that a lot easier. So I think that's sort of a good example of what that first step looks like. Now we start to transition into the next phase, which is now how can we sort of grow your business, not just with offering the solutions in, but ultimately looking at payments for the next 5 to 10 years. You know, none of these organizations are going to go extinct. Instead, they're going to actually be on the cutting edge of this. So now it's about building use cases, proof of concepts, and viable businesses on top of DLT that ultimately services a very similar parallel type business to what they're accustomed to doing.
I love it. That's amazing. And I love how you guys have basically started with, I wouldn't say that like crypto payments are that basic, but something which is really fundamental and high level, like payments. And you guys have gone deeper into the rabbit hole, both with these enterprises and on your own with the products that you're building. And you mentioned that the next step for a lot of these enterprises is going to be, so now that they have the digital assets, like what they can do with them. You mentioned DeFi is a step in, I mean, obviously the next level of that. And we know all too well that the vast majority of DeFi products out there are not enterprise ready or institutional ready. And I know that you guys are working in that direction. And probably the most simple primitive in DeFi is staking and basically putting assets to work. And I know you guys are building something in that direction with StakeFi. Could you give a basically an intro into what that is and why you're building it?
Yeah, no, that's great. So StakeFi Network is a B2B marketplace for staking and delegation services that we've built. It's going to be launching probably later this year. Really, it's focused on things like enabling, securing, and incentivizing. You know, for us, we have a wide range of enterprise clients that are looking at digital assets and basically future-proofing business models. You know, we believe that staking and passive income will be a requisite as a financial service in a wide range of offerings. So bank accounts, digital wallets, ride sharing applications. And I say these because we talk to all these very large institutions and organizations who are coming at us with really interesting traditional use cases where they'd like to see this capability built in. And then sometimes quite surprising to us, but also helping us understand the ubiquity of where all of this is ultimately going over the next few years. You know, so for us, we've been running a staking business for a couple years now on a bunch of different networks. We've seen what a lot of the larger staking platforms are doing. They have, you know, great services, but, you know, they really focus on non-custodial services. And obviously in our industry, when we're talking to retail, non-custodial is definitely the play and the way to go for probably 99% of the retail crowd. But, you know, when you're talking to a larger institution, they have a lot of concerns and worry around regulations, compliance, so on and so forth. And so for them, a non-custodial solution is not something that they can use for the assets that they ultimately might acquire, as well as when they're talking about downstream to their customers, whether those be B2B or B2C, they wouldn't be able to offer a non-custodial solution. Separately, they're not that interested in running some of this core infrastructure. They're actually just more interested in offering a, you know, sort of package service on top. So what we've done is we basically built this platform so that they can plug into it. They would have a wide range of different networks that they can offer staking services downstream to their customers, ultimately as a white labelable solution. Or ultimately, if they have a large treasury that they want to stake themselves, they can do that too. What we've done, though, is we started to build in qualified custodial wallets. So bringing in custodians, building their wallets directly into the platform. And so ultimately, it becomes not just a marketplace for the validator nodes, but ultimately, it's a marketplace for different custodians to be able to offer their services. And so that way, when a client comes on, and it can be a bank, it could be a payments company, it could be a crypto exchange, an application, or even a ride-sharing app, as I mentioned, they basically would be able to choose the network. And based upon the network, there might be multiple nodes in the marketplace. They'll have transparent data seeing the health of the servers, the consensus status, and then ultimately some of the metrics around what that particular node can do. But they'll also be able to choose the custodial wallet of their choice that's built in. There might be 2, 3, 4, 5 different participants. Ultimately, then they become, through this transaction, a client of the custodian, and ultimately send their assets of either themselves or their clients directly to that qualified custodian in a particular jurisdiction. And then from there, that custodial wallet can bind itself directly to the validator node of the customer's choice. And therefore, really, it's building that sort of, you know, touch and feel that they're used to and comfortable with in the traditional flows. But ultimately having exposure and the ability to offer these types of services, or new financial services to their clients.
Well, for sure. Now, I love how, I mean, you've gone deeper than just offering staking solutions, and you're actually building an enabler for all these businesses to actually add value to their clients through that infrastructure. And on our end at LimeChain, we obviously were also talking with some financial institutions. They want to do all these DeFi stuff, but they always custodian solutions are their first biggest problem, then compliance and regulation, and you guys are addressing that is huge. And I think we're going to see a lot of not only fintech companies, but banks and institutions starting to offer digital asset products within the next 2 or 3 years. And you guys are at the forefront of it, and I love it.
I think it'll be soon, yeah. Actually. So, it's super exciting.
Likewise. And you mentioned something very important, that you guys are building this for a variety of networks. Our thesis at LimeChain, and I'm sure it kind of matches with your thesis at BCW, is that The future is multi-chain, and obviously we've done quite a bit of work on Ethereum, but we've been progressively doing a lot of work on these other networks, and we work together on some projects at Hedera and other chains as well. What chains are you guys most active on right now, and how do you see a multi-chain world evolving in terms of interoperability?
Yeah, no, it's super exciting, actually. And so, you know, this also stems sort of our viewpoint of being multi-chain and somewhat platform agnostic, also stemmed out of running a lot of different validator nodes. Now, one of the interesting things about doing that is because we run nodes on, I think, 11 different networks, we're able to also analyze these networks for some of their efficiencies and deficiencies when it comes to actually, if you're an enterprise trying to build your next business on top of it. And so ultimately on our enterprise consulting side, we're able to take a lot of those insights and help organizations make those choices. Now for us, what we try to do again is stay agnostic to that in the sense that we'll give advice, we'll explain what we think makes the most sense for the particular use case. But ultimately we're not trying to push our clients into a specific network. We're trying to help them on their journey, understand why the reasons are that they should build on one versus the other. With that said, though, we do quite a lot of work in the Hedera world and the Algorand world as well. Specifically with the enterprises, there are some features and functions on those particular networks, specifically around finality, which is extremely important to some of these larger scale enterprise, and therefore they find themselves being a lot more comfortable building on top of those particular networks. We also obviously do quite a lot in the EVM world, and specifically with some of the different layer twos, as well as with the Polygon team and whatnot. So yeah, it's a wide range of what we do and who we work with. But again, it's not a one size fits all. It's really a use case by use case, client by client approach.
Sure. And if we dive a bit deeper, you mentioned that enterprises are looking for specific features and options when they're evaluating what network they should build on. You mentioned finality for a second there. What else they're also prioritizing when they're choosing their chain?
That's then where things like gas fees become extremely important. You need basically a set price that's not variable, and ultimately some of the functionality and features of what we see today in gas fees are just not possible for a wide scale, larger enterprise use case. And therefore, that sort of pushes these networks into pushes these enterprises into some of the networks that I think might not be as popular or readily chosen by the regular crypto crowd, but ultimately are some of the networks that you'll see the major use cases being launched on over the next couple of years.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And we've also encountered that, for example, when we're talking with enterprises, and we have like there are cases where we need to tell them that the transactions may cost anything between $10 and $200, depending on the state of the network, and you can see like the concern in their eyes, even if they don't do it right away. But
exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, there are now a plethora of digital assets on different networks, and we're reaching the stage that this poses different challenges, like interoperability, and could these assets move from one network to the other in a secure and fast and an efficient way, particularly for enterprises and basic institutions that are holding large volumes of these assets. I know that you guys are looking to address this challenge with a product called Hashport, and I wanted to dive a bit deeper into that because we're also involved on the Hedera side there. And would basically love to get a brief overview from you on Hashport, and why do you think it's important in this multi-chain world?
Yeah, sure. So Hashport Network's an interoperability portal. We use the term portal, but basically it's a bridge. And this is the first major bridge to connect Hedera Hashgraph with the EVM world. You know, we've taken the approach of looking at being platform agnostic. So today, as it launched in November of 2021, it's connected Hedera with Ethereum and Polygon, ultimately over the next 6 months and year, we have a pretty aggressive track of different networks, both EVM and non-EVM based, that ultimately will also be plugged into it, as well as different wallets. But we also looked at it from a couple other angles, one of those being security. And because we do have a lot of enterprise clients, and we're able to use them as a sounding board for talking to them about what a multi-chain, multi-asset world looks like, we were able to get the feedback from them that they're not extremely comfortable about using a lot of the existing bridging solutions out there today because they're not able to truly verify who is validating those transactions. So what we've done at Hashboard is we created a validator swarm. Basically, we wanted to decentralize the transaction validation of that. And so we put 9 leading organizations together in the DLT space as well as the traditional space. So we have LimeChain and ourselves are 2 of the 9 validators, accompanied by Animoca Brands, the Polygon Foundation, the HBAR Foundation, WorldPay from FIS, StableNode, which is a team spun out of the MakerDAO growth team, Hex Trust, who's a qualified custodian, and Galaxy, which is a social app that's being built on Hedera and led by Spencer Dinwiddie, NBA basketball player, and his team. And so really what we're doing there as well is we're using the Hedera Consensus Service, or what we call HCS, basically to timestamp and verify those transactions. And again, because we're using that, it does have 100% finality, which is, again, an extremely important component. Now, with that, though, we're looking at some pretty interesting features. So because we have both the retail side and the enterprise side, basically one of the things that the LimeChain team will be building out over the next couple of months, hopefully to launch in Q2, is the ability to have modularity directly built into that bridge. And so what I mean by that is, you know, today assets will be commingled in a particular smart contract for a particular asset that's ultimately getting minted or burned across the Hashport network. But really for some of the enterprise use cases, they actually, for whether it be regulatory and compliance reasons, they can't necessarily commingle funds in our general smart contract. So for them, we're actually going to be building out sort of modular rails of a bridge for their specific use cases. And then for that, not only will they be able to have segregated, smart contracts and accounts, basically to hold those funds. They'll also, based upon the type of use case that it is, be able to work with some of the pricing models and whatnot, as opposed to the general bridging solution. We expect over time that's going to pick up some pretty interesting traction for the different clients that we have. Separately, we're also going to, and this goes into the enterprise side as well, we go live, I think, in the next week or two with the functionality for porting NFTs across networks. And so when we get away from some of the focus of NFTs on particularly art or that type of creative NFT aspect, when we start to move into other more enterprise use cases, NFTs are going to become extremely regular in our lives, and ultimately they're going to need to be able to live on different networks. And so when you're talking about batching and porting or bridging a large amount of NFTs that maybe are even at low value, ultimately you're going to need these bridging solutions for that as well.
Oh, love it. And there are a couple of things that I want to unpack here. So just first want to summarize. There has been a lot of security concerns with a lot of these bridges, particularly around the EVM chains, which is understandable. So what you guys have done is create a secure and decentralized solution where, for example, the enterprises can enjoy the Hedera network, which they're comfortable with its security and all that, and then create a decentralized swarm of validators that are basically supporting bridging to all these EVM chains. And I think this could be huge for basically enterprise adoption of multi-chain digital assets and also making them feel secure. And the second thing is I want to go deeper on the NFT bridge, which I think could also be complete huge. And the reason being, you mentioned that you didn't build it, you're not building this in mind with the art and the creative aspect of it, but basically all the other use cases that can be around NFTs Could you give an example of those, whether it's deeds or financial documents, or what would you imagine as a use case for basically moving NFTs around if they're not art or collectibles?
Yeah, I mean, it could be even something as simple as your airplane ticket or a concert ticket that ultimately needs to sit in a particular wallet, but that might be different than where the issuer is issuing it from. And so ultimately, you'll start to see that things like bridges will be more in the background and become a lot easier to utilize and will become a lot more common, I guess, in the overall process as opposed to kind of what we experience today. But yeah, I mean, it could be anything from, yeah, as you mentioned, deed, all the way through to, airline tickets. And one thing about that, and really this was something that we, thought a lot about and, wanted to focus on, was that we didn't build a proprietary token into Hashport. You know, we felt that that added an extra layer of complexity and ultimately, you know, it's a great opportunity for a startup to be able to do that. Obviously, there's some, you know, fundraising mechanisms there that are extremely helpful for a young project. But we thought actually that that would deter a lot of the enterprises who ultimately can't source particular tokens very easily, and that would force them to be reliant upon having extra steps down the process in order to utilize this technology. So for us, you know, we see this more as a public utility that ultimately will be ambidextrous to handle different types of asset classes, NFTs, cryptocurrencies, and others, but also modular for different types of use cases than what we traditionally think today.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned that, I mean, something in terms of use case, which we're also super interested in at EnterDAO, because we're building basically infrastructure for the metaverse there. You mentioned that also Animoca is in the group of validators for the bridge. And I think a huge use case for that could be NFTs that are basically in-game assets, and interoperability between those, I think, is going to be a huge theme in the next few years, even if we're not quite there yet. But this bridge could prove to be super valuable for moving, because different games are on different networks, right? And soon we'll have interoperability between in-game assets, and I think this could be huge.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for Animoca Brands, but that's definitely one of the topics that we spoke with them about in order to have them also join us on this, as I think they see a bunch of very unique use cases for this public infrastructure that they would ultimately want to use for their gaming assets as well.
Yeah, for sure. Another question that I have is, obviously, we went through the basically the challenges of the multi-chain world in terms of security, finality, and all that. But I think another one that comes with these chains for the enterprises is basically transparency and basically looking at the data and deriving analytics from that. And what I mean by that is that obviously most of the chains that we mentioned are public, and they have different explorers and all that, and a lot of these enterprises have to do a bunch of reporting, and sometimes could be hard for them to basically manage different explorers, block explorers, do data analytics and stuff like that. How do you think, I know you guys are also building something in this direction, but how do you think enterprises currently solve that? Is it a challenge, first and foremost, for them to be basically collecting data from different sources, and how do you think they approach it currently?
Yeah, I think it's one of actually the most difficult pain points that they have is, where do they source this information from? I think that's what's the really exciting thing about decentralized, you know, finance, specifically DeFi data, where we can actually see transparently all of this data in real time, specifically even every wallet and transaction. When you're talking about some of the centralized data that you'll see in a centralized exchange, it's very hard, you know, separate from pulling that information from webhooks, to really know the validity of that data. So when we talk to institutions, because we're currently building a product called Blockpour, which we look to launch basically the first week of April, so it's coming up here, basically to solve this problem. And part of it was, you know, as we talk to these institutions and we ask them, you know, where are you sourcing your data? They tell us that's one of the main reasons that they're still on the sidelines. They just can't trust it. So, you know, they would say to us, if you have a solution for that, you know, we're all ears to take a look at. And so, you know, this is, as you're starting to see a theme of the different infrastructure that we build, which sort of solves a lot of these different types of problems. We have basically a DeFi data analytics platform that we have going live here in just a few weeks.
I love it. And if we go deeper into Blockpore, it's not just a block explorer, right? It's going to provide data analytics. So could you basically give a better overview to what is going to be in terms of set of features? Like, is it a multi-chain Etherscan, or is it a multi-chain Dune analytics, for example, that's more suitable for enterprise usage?
Yeah, so it's a multi-chain Dune analytics type platform. There are a couple other players out there, namely Nansen, who's done a great job. Sure. Basically, there's a very similar platform to them, although I think we are going to be doing things a little bit more interesting. And hats off to them for their journey so far. It's chain agnostic. We're going to be supporting pretty much all the burgeoning DeFi ecosystems across the different chains. At launch, we have four EVM-based chains that we'll go live with, so Ethereum, Polygon, Avalanche, and Phantom, and then we'll quickly look to integrate the other EVM and non-EVM chains this year. Basically, we want to make sure by the end of this year we have about 99% of the DeFi space covered. We see this as critical infrastructure for traders, but again, this is both for retail. We'll actually launch with a retail product, and a little bit different than, let's say, the Nansens of the world, where we'll actually have a freemium product. So everybody will be able to source this data for free. And then ultimately, as some of the more interesting features that we'll be adding to it, we'll have a subscription model sitting behind them. So we want to make sure, though, that, the DeFi ecosystem, as it expands and there's more coins trading across ever more chains, basically, we are there. Now, you asked, like, some of the interesting things that we can do. Specifically, one of them is around our indexer. By targeting only the relevant transactional data as blocks come in, our indexer is actually able to provide real-time market data from all of our supported chains. This is a little bit different than what some of the other players do. I'm not going to necessarily say how they go about it, but we've obviously done quite a lot of testing on this. We believe this is the fastest in the market to date, and as we continue to scale and ultimately co-locate, we hope to be the fastest multi-chain data provider in the industry, which we believe on day one we will be. So that's definitely an area that we're really, really excited about. On the data persistence side, we're able to capture this data at speed by going direct to the source and tapping directly into the nodes. So this is also where, when you look at BCW Group as a whole, we're almost vertically integrated in the sense where we're building these products and taking them to market, but ultimately they have a lot of synergies with other parts of our business. So if you're looking at a lot of the other, let's say, players that are out there today, they probably don't run a large staking business and a node operation business. We do. So we're able to actually pull that data directly from our nodes in some cases, which ultimately allows us to provide real-time market data from the different supported chains. And so therefore, we believe the speed of the market data is super critical, both for retail, but really for the institutions, and that's definitely been the feedback that we've gotten.
Well, that's great. I'm definitely checking this product out, both for myself and...
We'll give you a demo right after this.
I love it. I'm definitely checking it out. And I think analytics is going to be huge, and for not only for DeFi, but for the whole ecosystem of apps within the Web3 space, and both for retail and enterprises. And I also admire and hats off to you guys for the... I wouldn't call it complete, because you guys will probably build more products going forward, but you guys are... providing a very, very unique and vast set of products that basically enables those enterprises to bridge to the digital asset world. And this is something that I think benefits, the whole Web3 ecosystem benefits from that. So hats off to you guys.
Thanks.
We went to... At the beginning of this pod, we went through the consulting side of BCW. Now we covered most of the products that you guys are building. And I think another area which you guys are quite active at BCW is ventures. So I know you have an investment arm. Would love to dive deeper on that, and basically what investment teams are you guys looking at? Is it more on the enterprise side? Is it more on the retail app side, or is it a mix of both? What are you guys interested in right now?
Yeah, so I mean, we see this as the early days in Web3, and therefore, you know, we have a bit of a pick and shovel investment and build thesis. We understand that the gap in scalable infrastructure and infrastructure that gives peace of mind to the larger institutions and ultimately the currently sidelined money is where the focus for the next couple of years is ultimately going to be. So actually, this spans across a lot of different types of infrastructure. You know, just to give an example of what we've seen over the last, you know, year and a half, there's been an incredible amount of investment in the custodial tech side of the industry. But ultimately, that's one component of core infrastructure that's required. And you know, we're focused on initiatives across the entire stack. There are also critical building blocks for application development. So, you know, efficiency of proof of stake, interoperability, data plays, which I think you can probably see in some of the products that we build, but also in some of the teams that we invest in. You know, and separate from that, we're excited and focused on gaming and metaverse opportunities as well, as we think, you know, as the next billion plus gamers move into our space or at some point that they converge, we want to make sure that we're there. You know, so we're very lucky to have wide reach within the industry and have access to early stage investments. You know, as you guys know, starting in 2017 doesn't seem that long ago, but really it's about 40 years in crypto land.
Yeah.
So we've been able to, you know, meet a lot of incredible entrepreneurs and teams very early on, build relationships with them, and so therefore able to have access to some pretty exciting opportunities at very early stages, which we definitely get involved in.
Love it. And what is your typical sweet spot in terms of deals? Are you looking to be in the first round of deals? Are you looking to do follow-up round? Is it a mix of both? Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, so I mean, we invest both in like equity raises as well as token plays. And so, you know, we do have somewhat of an investment thesis that we really only invest in teams that we know. I think we're, again, fortunate to be able to say that and do that. But that is a really critical piece for us. So, and because of that, and we do have that trust and understanding of who they are and what they've accomplished in the past, obviously we want to be involved as early as possible. A little bit different for us too is that because we do all these other things in the industry. So when we do invest, ultimately we also want to help and support, whether that's through networks and relationships, even building something alongside them, or even just giving, you know, design and strategy opportunities or oversight to some of the different things that we do. But yeah, it's been a wide range of different profiles and investments that we've invested in. And last year we saw quite a range. So yeah, let me look. Yeah, we invested in custodial technology, decentralized capital market ecosystem for uncollateralized liquidity. So like a project called Clearpool. I'm not sure if you're very aware of that. We came in as well, invested in Super Oracles recently, which is a cross-chain Oracle solution backed by Coinbase Ventures, Animoca, Valor, Razor, Huobi, Hashed. Obviously, EnterDAO we joined, super excited about it. Yeah. Watching the products that are starting to roll out, Landworks and Metaportal, very excited about Metaportal and definitely see the synergies there with some of the stuff that we're doing in the gaming space, obviously. Participated in the Sharded Minds NFT launch and bought a couple Sharded Minds because we're really excited. Nice. Invested as well in some of the other types of infrastructure that we think is important. So we invested in Soma Finance. I know you had JP Morgan on your first podcast. We're excited about what they're doing and looking to accomplish as a fully compliant multi-asset DEX and issuance platform for a wide range of assets. So I think they're trying to tackle tokenized equities, crypto assets, STOs, NFTs, which is pretty exciting. We invested as well in a company called Fortress, which is basically a US licensed trust company. They are spun out of the Prime Trust team, and basically they've built out a trust company that's fully focused on the financial technology services needed for NFTs, which is pretty interesting. And then, yeah, another project that we got involved in last year that we're really excited about, and again, you'll see that these kind of fit with the different things that we do as well as a business, is with a company called Six Clovers. So they're a decentralized payments network. They have a couple solutions such as Rapid. That one enables instant payments worldwide, as well as another product called Ramp, which is a fiat on and off ramp infrastructure piece. That team's led by an incredible pedigree with Jim and Naz at the top. And basically, they originally had built out a company called Ruby Coins, which was acquired by PayPal back in the early 2010s. And then they moved into the crypto space as well, so that they have a pretty good understanding of this whole world. So as you can see, separate from that, some different gamified plays as well. So we're sort of all over the map, but I think if you look at it holistically, you know, it's focused on the core layers of infrastructure that ultimately will build up all of the exciting applications that, we'll be seeing in the future.
Well, for sure. And again, hats off. I mean, it takes quite a bit of resources to be able to cover that much in terms of different networks and ecosystems and also layers of the technology stack. So hats off to you guys. And how do you source all of these deals? Is it mostly true to the network because you guys are active builders and obviously active in all these ecosystems, or do you have projects come to you or mix of both?
Yeah, are you asking on the venture side or on the venture side? Yeah, I mean, I think mostly it's you know, friends at this point who are, you know, looking to build their next product or service, who basically are telling us about it, pretty excited about it, and you know, we're happy to get involved. We don't actively look for deals. I think it's just more within our direct network.
Nice. That's the best. I mean, building and investing with the friends and actually building building the rails of the Web2 world. So grateful to also be on that journey with you guys.
Yeah.
I guess those are all my questions that I have for this pod. Also, don't want to take too much of your time and keep the episode too long.
That was great.
I think it was an amazing show. Excited to share all of this with the audience. Is there something, as last words, that you want to share? You mentioned that you guys are hiring. Where should people find you? Is it the BCW website? Is it Twitter?
Yeah, okay. Well, so we have different websites for different businesses that we're hiring for. So, yeah, if you want to reach out to info@bcw.group, it's probably the best way to reach out to our team. Again, we're looking for a wide range of talent. We do love, as well, cultivating young talent, both on the tech and business side, who are very excited about this space and really going to be the generation that's going to take this technology to the next level. And so happy to have a talk with anybody. And again, we are a pretty decentralized team, so offices in Asia, but we do have remote teams working all around the world. And definitely, and I'll just throw it out there because, you know, we're all we're all trying to find talented people in the world, but definitely site reliability engineers, DevOps professionals, even if you come from the traditional world and you want to sort of get your feet wet into this space, reach out. We're always looking to hire those particular types of roles.
Nice. That's amazing. And I encourage anyone that's interested in the space just to look at what you guys are building. So there's so much to build and so much to get involved with. So either if people are into gaming or if they're into infrastructure, they can find something to get involved with. And I'm sure you would agree, but there has been, and I love it, I love to see it, a huge talent drain from traditional tech and traditional finance into Web3 and DLT. So I'm hoping that this trend continues.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing that. And, you know, funny enough, probably shouldn't say this, but why not? So, you know, we became in the Hong Kong market with a particular MBA program. We were the we were awarded this last year for being the number one hirer out of that. And so we beat out the big banks and everybody else who typically those MBA students are looking to go into. And I think they're more excited about the type of work that we all do and the industry that we're all in. And so, you know, at this point, I think I'm sure it's, I'm not just speaking for our company, but for LimeChain and others that at this point in time, there's just just an incredible amount of excitement, exuberance, and talented people that are trying to figure out how to get into this space. And I think it's all of our jobs from all of the different companies to welcome them in and help them build their skills, but also understand that a lot of their traditional skills that they've been bringing into this industry are well needed across both the technical side, marketing, sales, operations, and everything else. So
for sure. I love it. Right, Kyle, I want to thank you for being on the show. I really loved what we went through so far and grateful to be able to basically share this time with you and to build together. So once again, thanks for being on the show and just excited to build the future of Web3.
Pleasure was all mine, Z. Really looking forward to the next year and beyond. I know we'll be doing a lot of really fun stuff
together. For sure.
Thanks.
See you soon.